Welcome to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty, the host and creator of the show. As you may have heard, on September 30th, 2015, 2 years almost to the day after definitively announcing the Silverchair book will be the next Narnia movie, a short video featuring Douglas Gresham was posted providing an update on the project. Unfortunately, the only thing revealed was that the process for completing the script for the Silverchair is taking a long time, and that those things usually do. Ironically, this lack of further details means a previously recorded show I did 2 years ago is still relevant. Interestingly, only one major other piece of news was announced after that program was recorded in mid-October 2013. In early December of that same year, David McGee, a 2-time Academy Award nominee, was named as the screenwriter. Anyway, the following discussion was never released on All About Jack because at the time it was hoped that the Narnia movies would be back in production much sooner, and so another podcast site was created called NarniaCast. Thus, this show might be new to you because of not being aware of that other project I created with the help of Paul Martin from NarniaFans.com. Anyway, this repeat has, I believe, useful reactions and comments about the prospects of a Silverchair movie. As mentioned a moment ago, it was recorded a couple of weeks after the first announcement, back in October 2013. Originally, the show was divided into 2 30-minute episodes, but I combined them for this re-release. My guests for the show were Drs. Bruce Edwards, Charlie Starr, Crystal Hurd, and Devin Brown, along with Paul Martin, who, as I already mentioned, is from NarniaFans.com. If you are not familiar with any of those names, then be sure to listen at the end when I provide details about them. All have been guests on my show before. As we began to record the show, two of our guests, Dr. Devin Brown and Paul Martin, had unexpected delays and wasn't able to start with us, but they did join in shortly after, as you will hear. As already stated, we didn't know much news about the forthcoming The Silverchair movie. So the main issues addressed by the guests are, 1. Their reaction to the news, what they want to see in the movie, and what they don't want to see in the movie. Finally, to help you know which guest is talking, I will state the name of the guest before their comments are made in most cases. Well, I want to welcome the guests tonight to discuss about the Silverchair, the announcement that that's going to be the next Narnia movie. With me is Dr. Charlie Starr. Welcome to the show, Charlie.
Thank you, William. I am happy to be here.
Also, we have Dr. Bruce Edwards. Welcome to the show tonight.
Great to be here, William.
And then Dr. Crystal Hurd is with us as well. Welcome, Crystal.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So in discussing this Silverchair movie, we don't have any set questions per se, other than I'm going to get an initial reaction from our guest about what they thought. What was kind of the first initial thought, and then since then, regarding the Silverchair, and then we'll get into basically kind of what you're especially wanting to see in the movie, The Silverchair, and then maybe there's some things that you don't want to see. Other than that, we don't really have any structure. We're just going to see how our guests, what kind of thoughts they have. And I'll just go alphabetically with Bruce being the first one, and then Charlie, and then Crystal, so my guests will know how to kind of chime in, and if they don't really have a comment related further, then that's fine as well. So let's go ahead and start off with the initial thoughts. Bruce, tell us, when you heard the news about the Silverchair is definitely going to be the next Narnia movie, what was your initial reaction, and then any change since then?
Well, I think the first thought I had was, how did this happen? Meaning, it sounded like the Narnia series was at least on hold, depending upon investors and or screenwriters and that sort of thing. So I thought that's an interesting development, and I wonder how this one will be brought together.
All right, Charlie, how about you?
I always have a positive reaction when it comes to film adaptation, not because I think they're going to succeed, but because I want them to succeed. I'm an English teacher. I teach literature, but I also teach film and love film, and grew up as a kid who watched way too much television and continue to do so as an adult kid. So I'm certainly hopeful that we're gonna get a great Silver Chair film. I'd love to see all seven Narnia movies made. But there's always that little bit of trepidation. Are they going to do a faithful adaptation? And it's been hit and miss with the last, with the first three movies. So we'll, but I'm hopeful anyway that now that we're going with a new production company, that company will be just as interested as, some of the others were with the first film to be faithful to Lewis's vision.
All right. How about you, Crystal?
I was excited. I think the best words are cautious optimism for the announcement. Again, actually, we, as some people may know, William and Charlie and I actually saw Douglas Rushum at Asbury University a couple weeks ago, and he was sort of, you know, hinting at some possibilities. So I was excited to hear about it, but also like Charlie, I'm sort of, you know, I'm sort of cautious about that because, again, you want to capture what the author intended without straying too much for a specific audience or straying from the vision, the original vision that we get as readers. So I think it's good to have Lewis sort of out in public again and out on the public consciousness again. And hopefully, as the movies always do, it will generate more interest in the books and then hopefully the message behind the books.
Then for me, I was excited. I thought, okay, great. We are now knowing what's going to be next because prior to this, of course, all this is subject to change. We're recording here on the 14th of October, so hopefully there's been no breaking news that'll change some of these comments, but a couple months down the road, there may be some changing in announcements. But, you know, one of the things we have been waiting for was, okay, what will be the next Narnia movie? Is it going to be continue on with the publication order of the books, which is the Silver Chair for the next one? Do they jump ahead to The Magician's Nephew and so forth? So just having some type of news, I guess my initial reaction was, oh, great, a positive thought there. But then I thought, well, you know, since then have rewatched. I only watched The Voyage of the Dawn Treader when it originally came out. I did buy the DVD, so I have that. And so I watched it over the weekend. And prior to that, my opinion of that movie, which most people say is probably their least favorite, is that my initial reaction to the movie was, okay, not too bad, pretty good. But then since that time, actually, was when I just started doing my things online with Lewis and started reading him more closely. I had been reading Lewis for like 30 years, but hadn't really reread a lot of things like Voyage of the Dawn Treader. I don't think I had reread around the time the movie came out. I know I had listened to the Focus on the Family audio drama, but I wasn't as familiar with the story to go, oh, well, they didn't do this, they didn't do that, why did they do this? So after rewatching it, I'm going, oh boy, they need to really be sure to follow the book more closely. So now it's like maybe I'm a little bit more pessimistic. I'm more on the puddle glove side, I guess, so to speak. Now let's go ahead and kind of like look at some other aspects in terms of we'll put it kind of broad in terms of what you want to see or you don't want to see. Let me get some initial reactions. On the table here, going back to Bruce, is what are some things you either definitely want to see or you don't want to see in a film adaptation of The Silver Chair?
Well, a little hard to respond to without knowing a little bit more about intentions. I think I mentioned in our pre-conversation, you know, director, screenwriter, adapter. But as it goes, I think in some ways The Silver Chair is a can't-miss Narnian movie. Because so much of the action is internal to this particular set of escapades, and you got new characters like Puddleglum, which I'm desperately invested in. Puddleglum has to be captured well, and whether the queen is this way or that, or the witch rather. I hope they get Jill right, and I hope they get Eustace right. But Puddleglum to me is the center of the movie, the way Reepicheep to me should have been the center of Voyage of the Dawn Treader. So that's one thing. But I mean, you've got exotic locations, you've got different terrain. I mean, there's lots of things you can do with just the topography of this movie, and I hope that you know the resources are there to capture that topography, because it could be spectacular for reaching the imagination, apart from the dialogue and the credibility of what the screenwriters want to do with Lewis's original material.
All right, Charlie, how about you?
I would love to see Alan Rickman as Puddleglum. Alan Rickman is the actor who played Severus Snape in the Harry Potter films, and of course, his defining role, his great moment on the screen, was in Die Hard as the villain. That was a joke. Anyway, you know, he's the first actor I think of. They can cast whomever they want. I was thinking that the Silver Chair could be a potential problem cinematically, going off of what Bruce just said, because that excitement, that suspense that they used that green mist to produce in the Dawn Treader, I don't know that it's there in the Silver Chair from the point of view of adaptation. In the book itself, it's terrific, but I fear that they might try to pull off some sort of another MacGuffin, some sort of gimmick like the green mist in the Dawn Treader film, and I definitely don't want to see that sort of thing happen. But maybe with the right use of pace and the like, they can stay true to the original text. Obviously, it needs to be driven by the characters. The one thing I really loved about Dawn Treader, I thought, was the casting of Eustace. And though the actor may be very much older than Eustace would be, they could perhaps do something with that. I thought he did a great job myself. So it would be great to see him in the text again. It would be great to see a Trumpkin who is deaf that they have a hard time talking to, and owls that seem scatterbrained in the day and sharp at night. So there are just a lot of elements that would be wonderful to see. Cinematically, I think they could really do some wonderful things with the cave journey, the journey through the shallow lands. I suppose it shouldn't be so excessively beautiful that some of the sense of oppression gets lost, but it could still be cinematically stunning to see the giant time sleeping. They could really do some nice vistas, it seems to me, in terms of visuals for the journey through the underworld. A thing that I would love to see stay in the film that will be hard for them to pull off, I imagine, is that conversation that the Green Lady has with our heroes as she thrums on an instrument and tries to intoxicate them with the green smoke and convince them that there is no overworld. Aslan's just an overblown cat, and the sun is an overblown lamp. That's a very long conversation that ends in that wonderful heroic moment where Puddleglum says he intends to pursue Narnia, whether there is a Narnia or not. I get a feeling they will probably try to really pare that down, but I would really love to see the longer conversation in there. I don't know if that's going to be something they do or not.
I want to thank also Paul Martin from NarniaFans.com for joining us for this discussion of the Silver Chair movie.
Thank you for having me.
And then also we have Dr. Devin Brown. He is joining us as well. Thanks, Devin, for joining in for this discussion.
Well, it's great to be here, and it's great that there's a reason to be here, right?
Exactly. So in discussing this Silver Chair movie, tell us when you heard the news about the Silver Chair is definitely going to be the next Narnia movie. What was your initial reaction, and then any change since then? Paul Martin.
All right, when I first heard that The Silver Chair was going to be made in the next Narnia movie, first I was surprised by it, and then I quickly, as quick as I could, blogged about it. But initially my first thought was, what are they going to do about Eustace? Because Will Poulter is a foot or a foot and a half taller than he was when they shot The Voyage of the Dawn Treader. I mean, by the time they finished filming, and between when they finished filming and the premiere of The Voyage of the Dawn Treader, he had grown about 6 inches. And then since then, he's grown about another foot. And so if they're going to shoot it anytime soon, he is probably, I mean, his voice is definitely different. He definitely looks a bit older, and I don't know how they're going to manage that, but that was my first initial response to it was, what are they going to do about Eustace because of those reasons? And also, I was a little bit surprised that they decided to go that route, but at the same time, not at all, because I knew that that the C.S. Lewis Company had wanted to go that direction. So when they found the way to do it, I knew they'd jump at it, so... That was my first thoughts.
Dr. Devin Brown.
Well, I'm really excited, obviously, and I'll go three directions on this. First off, I'm one of those people who likes the original order of publication, and you know this that could be a whole separate chat, right, guys? But so for me, Silver Chair is book number 4. Now it'll be movie number 4, and so that works great for me. I understand that Eustace is a little old right now. I'll figure that out. I'll say something odd is that I'm kind of glad that Dawn Treader wasn't a little bit better than it was. And let me explain. So Dawn Treader veered off course, as we would say in the shipping business, so much so that it got unplugged and it's going to get restarted again. And I think the suggestion is that if it had been a little bit better, we might have continued on that same course, which was sort of okay, well, definitely okay in some ways, and definitely not okay in others, and sort of okay in some. But I think that it was just off course enough that they're going to say, let's set sail in a different direction this time. Theoretically, one that will be more to everyone's liking. That's what I'm hoping. Lastly, I guess I wasn't surprised. Douglas Gresham was in Kentucky the week before the announcement came out, and he and I did a TV interview, and I asked him, if you're going to announce that the Silver Chair's got the green light, could you wait and do it at Asbury tonight? Because, wouldn't it be great? Dateline, Wilmore, Kentucky, all around the world. Having said that, he said, I can't say anything yet. He gets back to Malta, and, of course, the next week they announce it. And so I emailed him. I said, really? You couldn't have announced it a week earlier here in Wilmore? And he said, I had no idea it was going to come out when it did. So he knew something was in the works. He wasn't quite sure when it was going to be able to be announced. So.
Ah, very interesting. Yeah. Let's go ahead and you guys haven't heard the initial. Actually, Crystal hasn't had a chance, so we'll give Paul and Devin a little bit of a break here. And then Crystal is now tackling the what your thoughts were in terms of what you want to see and as well as what you don't want to see in a Silver Chair movie.
Well, as far as the Silver Chair, it's sort of a unique and different experience than the first three because we don't have as much continuity between the characters. For casual moviegoers, I think this may be a little difficult. We have Eustace, who's sort of a secondary character in the first film, but he's going to take on the role of the protagonist, which I think that would be a good story to sort of grow his character. Sort of show his development, both spiritually and just physical maturity, through that second film. Also, being the only female panelist, I am very interested in how they will portray Jill. And I've had several people tell me that's their favorite, other than the Queens of Narnia, that's their favorite female character from the series. So I do hope they do a really good job with her. On a side note, because I teach public school, I know that the anti-bullying programs are really strong right now. And as you guys know, the Silver Chair actually begins right after an episode of bullying. And it's Jill is crying and Eustace has come to comfort her. So I think I'm expecting them to sort of play up that aspect and sort of connect with kids who maybe feel disenfranchised or something. So play off that. But I'm pretty interested, just like Bruce mentioned, the topography is massive in this film. I mean, you've got the Land of Giants. I was wondering if they would even maybe channel a little bit of, Lord of the Rings type thing with the underworld and sort of recall that. But it's going to be, I think, an interesting challenge. But definitely it's something that I'd be interested in seeing
you know, hopefully, again, staying true to Lewis's vision.
Paul Martin.
What I hope to see in the film is something that is really just a good adventure into the underworlds of Narnia and stuff. And I want it to have kind of the scope that I imagined it to be, but also be as dark as I want it to be in that regard. But I want to see a good actor playing Puddle Glum, like a good dark actor, and be able to have that actor be able to portray really his whole mentality of being so negative and yet so positive, play it up really well, so people understand that he's not all glum and gloom. I mean, it's going to take someone, I almost imagine a Johnny Depp type actor playing that role, but hopefully not, because he's kind of overdone. But what I don't want to see is Tilda Swinton as the Green Witch, the Lady of the Green Kirtle, because that was done with the BBC, and it's confused people ever since to think that that's the same character as the White Witch. When I spoke to Doug Gresham about it, when the Voyage of the Dawn Treader was coming out, he said that he thinks that they'd cast someone younger, and I am hoping that is the case.
Dr. Devin Brown.
Like most people that are talking tonight, I'm sure I'd like to see an adaptation that is more faithful than not faithful, right? One that follows the book, as closely as possible, veering only when necessary. I'll tell you what, the focus on the family chair adaptation, a lot of people know. And I'm trying to remember who Paul McCusker got to play Puddle Glum there. He was actually a famous British actor, the guy who had played Fagin in Oliver Twist. Anyway, he was very good. And what you don't want Puddle Glum to be is to be Jar Jar Binks, right? He can't be that guy. He's got to be someone with more depth. Because certainly it's going to come out at the end, and it can't be a surprise. I guess for me, the other thing, little thing that I'm looking forward to is, Aslan's famous scene with Jill where there are no other streams. Come on, you got to have that in there. Just blowing them to Narnia, I think, is going to seem pretty cool. And, that final scene, here's a spoiler, beware, where Casbian gets put in the stream, and then Eustace has to pluck that thorn and the great lion's drop of blood, and he comes back to life. Oh my gosh, it's going to be great, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, yes.
I love that. I love that line where Caspian is walking toward the children and they're afraid of him. And they say, hasn't he? And Aslan says, died? Yes. Most people have, That's just, what an attitude toward death. Just absolutely terrific. It would be great to keep that in there, wouldn't it?
Yes, we need to start a petition, Paul. Keep that line.
Well, I want to allow everyone to kind of react to things that each other have said. We'll just go around alphabetical to any kind of reactions to what each other has said. Bruce, you kind of get the first one, then Charlie, then Crystal, then Devin, then Paul.
Well, Crystal has mentioned something again about topography, and so set design and costuming, all those which were certainly important to the first Narnian movie, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that's incredibly important. And I don't know what the budget will be like. I assume it will not be as expansive as it was for the first three movies. But because Lewis, in this particular Narnian tale, is very episodic, and even he's seeing pictures in his head again. And I think that the next producer, director, screenwriter has to take advantage of that. I take it that Doug and others thought Prince Caspian was not particularly cinematic, so much of the derivative material comes in. And I think this is a movie that stands on its own. And I think if they trust the material, there are five or six or seven great scenes, set pieces, so to speak, that I think could be, transcend the fact that this is a Narnia movie. I think it'd just be a great movie if they do it well.
Charlie, you're up.
Yeah, well, I, tongue in cheek, I was thinking about what Crystal said about the issue of bullying, And to go to the other end of the novel, the solution to bullying is that the children are allowed to chase the bullies away and smack them with the flats of their swords, so long as they only use the flat edges. So I'm wondering, Crystal, if you think that's probably a good lesson to be teaching young people. Let's deal with bullying by handing kids blunted instruments to beat the bullies with. I personally like it and think it's a great idea.
Do you want them to use swords, Crystal?
Actually, there's a zero tolerance policy for anything with a sharp edge now. So even plastic swords that I use for Shakespearean things have to be approved. and the Odyssey, we can't. I've had kids ask me, can I bring in, you know, a bow and arrow for the Odyssey, you know, when they're doing the whole scene, you know, with Odysseus and the challenge with the bow, and that was also next. So it actually counts as a real weapon. So,
well, let me jump in Crystal's defense at the end.
Thank you.
Before get hot water with various principals or who knows what, or they rebrand her school as Experiment House, is to say that at the end of Silver Chair, the adults in authority have really abdicated that authority. And that's the only way that these two children can retaliate, right? There's no adults there to help them out. At Crystal School, all you'd have to do is tell a teacher, and the teacher would help set things right.
Yeah, there you go.
I do think that overall, I think Lewis's real message is more critique on the education system, really. And as we've mentioned in the Narnian podcast, Lewis himself was bullied, and he mentioned in Surprise by Joy that he was not much of it. He didn't possess any athletic prowess. He was more a reader because of the joint in his thumb. He couldn't, you know, do much. So, I think he sort of felt isolated off the bat. But, you know, I think that was more because of the schools were getting, again, more experimental, more scientific, less focus on faith and imagination. I think that was more a criticism of the overall setup there.
Whoever wants to chime in, go ahead. Alphabetically, I guess we're actually at Devin, although he already jumped in. So, Devin or...
Yeah, I'll throw a couple more ideas. Is that, you know, the scenes with Aslan at the beginning and end, I think that bookended will need to be just right. And I'll just say this. I just happened to watch the end of Silver Chair, that the final scene with Aslan there and saying goodbye. And that's a pretty poignant scene. I'm looking forward to those scenes again with Aslan at the beginning. You know, there is no other stream, and then at the end when they come back and he cries a great tear of sorrow. I mean, it's just, those are great scenes. I'm looking forward to the scenes with Puddleglum, and, you know, I don't know if anybody's mentioned the owls yet, but I'm looking forward to them. And that flight scene, I mean, I think that they're ready to show really what it looks like, but what it feels like to fly in the back of an owl.
Yes, that owl scene would be very interesting because they can do that now to make it very realistic.
And what I was going to say is it sounds like we're going to get like a never-ending story like flight scene where they're kind of riding on Falcor, only in this case it's owls, and the Parliament of Owls will be there, and we're going to have like kind of a view of Narnia like we haven't had before with amazing flight scenes through Narnia, and we're going to get to see Narnia from other angles, I guess.
Oh, that's a nice point.
Regarding the selection of a screenwriter or writers for The Silver Chair, for example, do they need to have people who have read the book at least 10 times, or are there other important qualities to look for? This question arose partly from a private conversation I had with another Lewis expert, Darren Scott Jacobs. Well, enough background and setup. All I have left to introduce is the fact that I pitched the question about screenwriter to Dr. Charlie Starr, who begins by sharing some of his experiences with working on creating movies on a much smaller budget.
I teach a film class, and in my film class, I've sort of decided that the best way to teach people how to watch movies is to get them to make movies. And so I learned film editing or video editing back in the 90s and did some summer work for studios, all very low-end stuff. And then I worked on trying to bring film into the classroom wherever I could, whether doing creative projects or documentary projects. Of course, I really can't comment with great experience on the upper levels of the industry. But what I might say is, in relation to what we typically see of an quotation marks Christian film, often makes us weep for its being so amateurish and didactic, and I could list a number of other problems. And so it seems to me that the route to go in terms of screenwriter and director is with people who are professionals, people who have done it, people who have worked with big budget films, and people, and can you find those people then, screenwriters who have written big budget movies, directors who have directed them, can you find those people then who are going to be capable, who are going to be willing to be faithful adapters? And that's the trick. Again, in looking at the first three Narnia films, I feel like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe was successful adaptation. There are always things you can find to critique, negatives that you can make about it, but I felt like in terms of the question of faithful adaptation that the first film succeeded very much. So it can be done, and it has been done, but I think the one comment I can make is that they're going to have to go with people who have experience in the industry at that high level.
Dr. Bruce Edwards.
I agree with Charlie that the first movie, Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, had this advantage. You had Adamson saying something like, I wanted to make the movie based upon my experience as a 9-year-old reading that book. At least that had a focal point. That had a coherent vision for what he wanted to do. And, of course, he had been Shrek director and he had been working with animation. And I think that paid off and results in a much more satisfying movie experience. And I think what we've got to have on this movie, The Silver Chair, is someone who has that vision for the work. I don't know if it depends so much upon them having read it 10 times, as much as catching the vision of Lewis as a childlike innocence toward the world they're inserted in. And I think Jill plays that role in this book. She's the non-Narnian who's introduced to Aslan and the wonder of the landscapes. And I think she must be the one through whose eyes we see so much of this. And I think the screenwriter, and then working with the director, has to have that common vision of what you want to accomplish. And as others have been saying, I think there are 5 or 7 really important set pieces in this movie, and most of them have been mentioned. And I think the satire of modern education and so forth, that's important. I hope that theme gets in. But I think it all comes back to someone who maybe doesn't share line by line, you know, trying to recover every single thing in the silver chair, as much as being willing to make that material live on its own terms within that world that they're building, which I think Peter Jackson had done marvelously. He had much more material and many more rabid and angry fans to satisfy. I think we just would like to see a movie that has our memorable lines. There is no other stream. Devin is right. That's got to be in there.
Dr. Devin Brown.
Yeah, I was thinking this, that unlike Prince Caspian, where they walk and walk and walk and walk and walk and walk through woods, pretty ordinary woods most of the time, they do a fair bit of walking here in Silver Chair, but every other scene will be different. And so that alone is going to take care of this episodic thing, right? We're in Aslan's country, and then we're there at Caer Paravel, and then we're at the Parliament of Owls, then we're at the home of the Marshwiggles, and then, you know, each scene is going to be taking us to a new exciting place. So yeah, there's a lot of walking, but the episodic problem shouldn't be a problem this time. And of course, we have a huge climax built in that we don't have to create one. That incredible scene where, you know, the prince comes back to life, the Green Witch shows back up, we defeat her, we're hacking snakes, and then the whole underworld falls apart. I mean, they're not going to have to – I understand the three-act play in movies, and they're not going to have any trouble having this fit that.
Paul Martin.
Regarding the screenwriters that they're going to get, it is something that kind of – it's a book that could almost write itself as a screenplay in a lot of ways. But it also needs Like the Green Witch kind of, I don't know if she needs the place that she comes from necessarily. I mean, we didn't need to know where the White Witch came from for the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe to succeed. So where she comes from and why she's there, she, like, I don't know if they'll invent something for her, but if they just took the book as is and kind of turned it into a screenplay, there are a lot of writers in Hollywood that I think could do it and do it well, but I definitely agree that it needs to be someone that is experienced in Hollywood, and they don't necessarily need to be like the biggest fan of Narnia ever. Just someone, even like the guy that wrote all of the Harry Potter films. He now has written, you know, 8 Harry Potter movies, and now he's writing his own fantasy series, and he knows kind of what it takes to extract the themes from a book and put and figure out what the main theme is and apply that to the film. And someone like that, or someone like that has written a lot of the many fantasy films that we've gotten over the past few years. I mean, I don't think we're going to be getting, you know, the people that wrote with Peter Jackson, his wife, and then their co-writer on The Hobbit, but we'll probably get someone like the writers for Bridge to Terabithia or City of Ember, someone on that level, which they do a fine job of making a film happen that is both faithful to the book and cinematic, equally cinematic. And that's what I'm kind of hoping for, someone that can bridge the gap between the novel and the silver screen, really.
Dr. Charlie Starr.
I really think that idea of adaptation is important. Something that C.S. Lewis said that was marvelous in an experiment in criticism is that when we're looking at any art form, we need to judge it as the particular kind of art form it is. And one of the things we have to ask is what is its function? What is its purpose? What does it do? And he gave this wonderful illustration. You don't judge a butter knife by how well it cuts steak. So when we talk about what's going to make a good film, we can't say, well, a good film is going to be the book in celluloid. It just doesn't work that way. There's always too much in the book. If you wanted to do the entire book word for word, you would have to do a television miniseries, and it's not anything I'm particularly interested in seeing. So when we talk about bringing the book and bringing it to film, we do have to think in terms of what are the things that film likes. Simple example. One of the critiques I heard, only briefly, but one of the critiques I heard that was sort of negative against the first Narnia film was that the battle sequence at the end of the movie was rather long and drawn out, and it only takes up a couple of pages in the book. My response to that is to say, yes, but that's what film does. Film is spectacle. It's meant to do those kinds of things, to give us those kinds of visual thrills. And I don't really have a problem with that. I would still call that part of faithful adaptation, given that there must be an adaptation, that activity has to happen for the book to be made into a movie.
Dr. Devin Brown.
You know, Charlie says that those battle scenes were in the book, and he's absolutely right. And he's also right when he says that films are spectacle. Sometimes when I talk about adaptation, I from book to from silver chair to silver screen, I talk about the idea that Tolkien's books and Lewis's books are sort of like a symphony, in that there's, you know, fast loud parts and there's quiet soft spots, and in all the film adaptations, the loud fast spots get lengthened and emphasized, and I guess I don't find a problem with that so much as that the slow quiet spots get lost sometimes. In other words, I don't know why we can't have a little of each, because the slow, quiet spots, I think, are just as poignant, just in a different way. So there's a few of those, you know, with Jill and Eustace and Puddleglum, and I don't see any way that they'll just chop them all out. They're pretty nice, and they're part of the character development in this book.
Anyone had something they were itching to say?
I was just curious what people were looking for in a director for the film, but I don't know if that's too close to the writer. I mean, if you had any specific names in mind or otherwise that you were thinking, or if you want to see, like, Andrew Adamson return or what have you.
My vote would be for Ron Howard.
That's nice.
Any particular reason, or is that more facetious?
No, just because he's almost good every time he does something, right? I'm just going with the odds.
It might make up for Willow.
Point well made. I'll jump in with a completely unrelated point in the wrap-up here, is that I'll be curious to see how the renewed interest in Silverchair carries over into other Lewis projects. I think everybody around the table will remember that when the Narnia movies were moving forward pretty strongly, there was sort of a spillover interest in possibly making a movie of Screwtape, in possibly making a movie of The Great Divorce. And, you know, as long as they're done well, I would love to see those things go forward as well. In other words, there is a wave of interest that can actually do some other great things, other Lewis projects, I think.
I would love to see The Great Divorce. And I think especially because what Lewis does so well there, I know this is a little topic, but what Lewis does so well there is that he sort of shows us that even our perceptions of the afterlife are sort of steeped in, you know, ourselves. You know, they're still very, very subjective. I love that. I would love to see that. Yeah, but absolutely. I'm a big fan of Narnia. I always, you know, have been since I read them, even though I came to them late in my life. And it would be so great to see sort of the spirit. And again, as I mentioned earlier in the discussion, just a revival and an interest, a general interest in Lewis and some of the other things that he has written. I think, Paul, you mentioned this a while back, but every time a film comes out, the publisher sees an increase in all sales of Lewis material because people... Right, yeah, so people start purchasing The Great Divorce and the Screwtape Letters and other things because they discover Lewis just like we have. So anytime I see the movie, you know, I hear of the movie coming out, it really leaves me hopeful that that we'll have a lot more new fans and a greater sort of understanding of life and humanity and apologetics and all the great stuff that Lewis wrote about.
Mm-hmm. In fact, from what I understand, the... when I think it was The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe came out, there was actually a higher sales of the rest of Lewis's works than there were of even the Chronicles of Narnia at that time. Like that spiked and not the Chronicles of Narnia. That went up a bit, but the rest of his works were highlighted by booksellers, and so they were just everywhere.
Yeah, and the other thing I want to throw in is I'm on Charlie's turf with adaptations here, but there's already been a very successful stage adaptation of Screwtape, and I actually saw, a non-for-profit, not super professional, but great production, stage production of The Great Divorce, which is out there. So both books, you know, do well in other mediums. I know the stage is different than the screen, but the suggestion is that if it can take it that step, they could probably go another step and make them into pretty good movies.
Indeed. I'd definitely be all in for a Screwtape Letters and definitely Great Divorce. And I've heard mention of Till We Have Faces as being one of the dream projects as well.
Till We Have Faces, I think, would be very doable cinematically. The Great Divorce is going to be a lot tougher. Scripting that, creating a story arc that's going to carry an audience through. I want to see it, but that one's going to be tough to do.
One of the things I want to throw out is something I remember hearing some other people talk about regarding the reaction to the Silverchair movie, and that is the portrayal of Aslan. One of the things that Darren was noting was he wants to see a little bit more realistic, noting that he is a lion and that Jill in the book is very, very terrified of him. And the type of lion that maybe we've seen in some of the movies was not as terrible per se. And then someone else was noting that if they had to choose between like a CGI-ish version of like Puddle Glum or spending more time on Aslan, they wanted more time on Aslan, I believe.
Oh, I am... I am pro the CGI Aslan. Lewis's biggest concern for adaptation of the Narnia books. Well, let me read a letter that Lewis wrote to a fellow named Sievering in 1959. He says, "I am absolutely opposed." Adamant isn't in it. To a TV version, anthropomorphic animal, referring to Narnia, anthropomorphic animals, when taken out of narrative into actual visibility, always turn into buffoonery or nightmare, at least with photography. Cartoons, if only Disney did not combine so much vulgarity with his genius, would be another matter. A human pantomime Aslan would be to me blasphemy. When we were at Asbury University and Douglas Gresham was talking about films, someone asked him what he thought Lewis would think of the Narnia movies so far. And the thing that Douglas focused on was this very issue. He said he thinks that Jack would have liked their Aslan. And the technology that's gone into the creation of Aslan is really pretty mind-boggling. What I really appreciate about Aslan, and I agree that Lewis would not have felt Aslan to be blasphemy the way he appears, the quality of the lion as he appears on the screen. What's really amazing is the computer technology behind it, the CGI technology. In order to create just 1 second of Aslan for the screen, computers had to crunch numbers for 2 weeks. 2 weeks to produce 1 second of Aslan in what's called render time or crunch time. And I think the technology was terrific as far as that's concerned. I just wish Aslan had had the prominent role he was supposed to have, for example, in Prince Caspian. They did such a good job with him. Let's see him more.
Paul Martin.
That actually leads us into the Silver Chair quite well, because we're going to see more of Aslan, I believe, at the beginning and in parts various around the middle of it, and then the end, of course. Hopefully we get to see Aslan as much as we expect. With Prince Caspian, there was, of course, a great scene in the book where he goes through the towns and whatnot, and we lost that for the big screen, but hopefully this time they take the time to put Aslan everywhere. Don't know who's going to do the voice of Aslan, if it'll be Liam Neeson still, but hope so, and otherwise we'll be talking about a whole new Aslan in the coming months.
Dr. Bruce Edwards.
I think, again, with the Silver Chair, we have the opportunity to see, you know, what I called earlier in the conversation, a kind of can't-miss story because of the way it's written, its episodic nature. I think the key is how the vision of Lewis is enacted on the screen. And I don't know as much about movie making as Charlie and maybe the rest of the clan, but I do have a son who works in Hollywood and recently made a movie here in Alaska. And what struck me about his craft is, you know, how, relatively speaking, a 90-page double-space, single-spaced script turns into the vision on the screen. And so you really don't have a lot of sort of texture, subtlety to do. And I'm just amazed at how well any movie gets made, even if we don't like the movie or don't like the themes of it and so forth. And so it sort of humbled me to be a little less critical of those who have made the movie so far, because I was really pretty harsh. I like to see the greatest, most spectacular Narnian movie made, of course. And I think if more Aslan or greater CGI or owls that, you know, look like they could be your next door neighbor, I'm all for that. But I really want to see the heart of Lewis portrayed. And if that's done, I'm a happy moviegoer.
Dr. Crystal Hurd.
Yeah, I think this will be a good installment. And I guess, like the other panelists, I'm very hopeful and I think optimistic about hopefully capturing Lewis's vision. Again, I kind of concur with Bruce. As long as you sort of capture what Lewis wants, the story is so well written, and it's, you know, you have such a vibrant cast of characters here, and a whole new, really, cast of characters for a lot of the people who aren't familiar with Narnia. You've got the Marsh Wiggles and the Giants, a lot of people we've only seen sort of in passing. And other books. So, again, I desperately hope to see the resurrection sort of scene at the end with Caspian. And, again, I, you know, to see a whole new generation, Eustace and Jill,
sort of being led by and empowered by Aslan. I think that's such a great message for children or for adults, is that we can become better people. We go through things and we can become better people through, you know, help that is from another world. So I think I'm pretty optimistic and excited about the project.
Dr. Devin Brown.
Yeah, I'm also very optimistic and very excited about the project. I mean, for as much as we quibble, and really most of what we talk about are our quibbles, whatever movie they make, and I really mean whatever movie they make, and I'm very hopeful it's going to be a great movie, is it will bring readers to new people to read the book that would never have read it otherwise. I'm thinking of the kid that never puts his foot inside the library. Kids who never go to youth group at night are going to go see this movie, whether our quibbles are met or not, and a bunch of them are going to want to pick up Lewis and open the door to that adventure that lies between those two pages. And let's be honest, the people on the show tonight are all pretty, you know, middle-aged white folks. And, you know, we need more Lewis readers from not in that age group. And this movie is going to do great things for that.
Dr. Charlie Starr.
I'll talk a little bit about it a tad more seriously, but in one of the 30 or so books that came out with the Right Before the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe film, I wrote an essay called The Silver Chair and the Silver Screen, and so I'm claiming dibs on the title. But a tad more seriously, I start by talking about Plato's allegory of the cave, where people sit in a cavern chained against the wall and fires behind them lighting up puppet figures, casting shadows in front of them. And it occurred to me that Plato would probably be just horrified by the movies, because there we are paying money to go get stuck in his cave. But then on the other hand, Lewis says something that's just absolutely wonderful in The Last Battle, not The Silver Chair, but still, where he's trying to talk about how Narnia meant more. And he says, "You may have been in a room in which there was a window that looked out on a lovely bay or a sea or a green valley that wound away among mountains. And in the wall of the room opposite to the window, there may have been a looking glass. As you turned away from the window, you suddenly caught sight of the sea or that valley all over again in that looking glass. And the sea in the mirror and the valley in the mirror were in one sense just the same as the real ones, yet somehow they were different, deeper, more wonderful, more like places in a story." And it occurred to me that Lewis is almost telling us that when you put the picture in the frame, the picture becomes more magical, and maybe that is something we can apply positively to film.
You're awfully deep, Charlie. I'm not even sure I ever understood that Lewis quote. I've read it many times, so thank you.
Thank you.
I'm just excited about the movie, that's all. It's there's something new coming, and it crashed my servers twice. When I got it back up, it crashed again because people were so excited about a new Narnia film on its way. So I'm just pumped that there's going to be some more Narnia.
Yeah, and Paul, I think it's not just that there's going to be one film. We assume there's going to be one, and it's going to be successful, and then there's going to be another one, and another one, and another one. I mean, the train is back on the track.
Mm-hmm. We're back on, and we're revving up the engines again, so that'll be great.
And, you know, there's no more, in case you've checked, there's no more Harry Potter to do. There's no more Tolkien to do unless they're going to do, like, Leaf by Niggle or something.
Well, on the note of Harry Potter, there is going to be more Harry Potter movies, though.
Yep.
J.K. Rowling's writing original screenplays.
Yeah, so it'll be a prequel of some sort.
Yes.
Yeah. Boy, Devin makes a really good point that there's a whatever results we get in the films, there's a real excitement to the idea of film adaptation. I remember several years ago when we were at Taylor University, Devin was able to show us several minutes of The Dawn Treader before anybody else got to see it. And people just flooded the little room that we were in. They were so excited. They were so hopeful. And if our hopes weren't quite met, we remain hopeful nevertheless. There's just something about film that has a magic to it that makes us want to see some of our favorite stories visually. I suppose I might add just that Lewis, he said negative things about film, but every so often you see a positive glimpse as well. And the naysayers might take a look at what Lewis said about film that was in the positive, because those things do exist. Eventually, I'm going to write something on this, and right now I've got the idea of of a, at least a chapter for a book that you might call Lewis's love-hate relationship with film, probably mostly hate. But he did say some nice things about film that are worth looking at.
Didn't he see King Kong? I think I
yes.
read Alma read before me.
Yeah, yes.
he saw King Kong as an undergrad.
Yeah, he loved the parts on the island. He wasn't all that happy with the parts in New York. He thought they were rather bad, in fact. But when it was mythic, he loved it.
That's where we ended things. Actually, because we were starting to experience some problems on Skype, there were other comments from the guests that couldn't be recorded, but either way, I believe all the significant parts were shared with you. Let me tell you a few things about our guest. Dr. Charlie Starr teaches English, Humanities, and Film at Kentucky Christian University and is the author of Light, C.S. Lewis's first and final short story. His website is simply charliewstarr.com. Dr. Devin Brown is a Lilly Scholar and Professor of English at Asbury University. Dr. Brown has published numerous essays and scholarly articles on C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien. Additionally, among the many books he has published, they include Inside Narnia, A Guide to Exploring the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And this year, he published A Life Observed, the Spiritual Biography of C.S. Lewis, which had a foreword by Douglas Gresham, C.S. Lewis's stepson. Dr. Bruce Edwards is Professor Emeritus of English and Africana Studies from Bowling Green State University. He's the author of several works on C.S. Lewis, Not a Tame Lion, The Spiritual World of Narnia, Further Up and Further In, Understanding C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. He is also the editor of the four-volume encyclopedia, C.S. Lewis, Life, Works, and Legacy, from 2007. Dr. Bruce Edwards also runs a website called cslewisreview.org. Dr. Crystal Herr did her doctorate on C.S. Lewis as a leader. Her website is crystalherr.com. It features a great deal of information about Lewis, not only as a leader, but she has also been doing a series focusing on Lewis and his views and relationships with women. Paul Martin runs several websites and is the founder of NarniaFans.com, a site dedicated to fans of Narnia since being created in late 2003. While it focuses mostly on the movies, there is also information about the Narnia books and some general C.S. Lewis information. And I'm William O'Flaherty. Thanks again for listening to this special re-release of a conversation recorded in mid-October 2013. Because of that, I wanted to note a few things. One has to do with a comment about a play version of The Great Divorce. Since 2013, the same group that created an excellent stage version of the Screwtape Letters did the same for The Great Divorce. The next has to do with the fact mentioned at the start of the show. In December 2013, it was announced that David McGee, a 2-time Academy Award nominee, would be the screenwriter for The Silver Chair. Finally, while I mentioned the latest news from Douglas Gresham wasn't all that much, I do provide links in the show notes to several articles that talk about it. Also in the show notes are search links to other shows my guests from today have been on. You can get the show notes by either going to EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com, which is the location where the audio files are hosted. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. Again, that's AllAboutJack.podbean.com. If you go to the other location, EssentialCSLewis.com, you can still get to this podcast. Plus, I have a variety of articles there as well, including a series examining quotations alleged to be from C.S. Lewis. Additionally, I also share a daily fact, quote, and quiz at EssentialCSLewis.com. I hope you enjoyed today's show enough to want to share it. Also, feel free to leave comments about the program online and consider listening to other shows. Recent shows include, not that long ago, a 2-part podcast about a new book on Lewis's wife, simply called Joy, that I also made available as a single show, and an interview with one of the editors of C.S. Lewis and His Circle. Older episodes to consider listening to are a short talk I gave about quotations that are not quite Lewis, and my last new essay chat about
Screwtape proposes a toast. Again, you can hear those and others by either going to EssentialCSLewis.com or allaboutjack.podbean.com. If you have questions or comments, email them to info@EssentialCSLewis.com. Again, that's info@EssentialCSLewis.com. Finally, did you know that you can help make sure this podcast is freely available to all? Consider becoming a financial supporter of this podcast and make sure it continues. There is a link in the show notes about this. Contributions can be as little as $1 a month. There are some great rewards possible, and no long-term commitment is necessary.